It's me. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow.
Ow.
Welcome to the Nastorious Public Radio Show.
That's right. Welcome. You're listening live to the Nastorious Public Radio Show on SkidRowStudios.com. If you're awake, you're in your underwear, in your living room, eating rice cakes with soy milk, give us a call, 1-800-893-9562. Do it. It's good for you. I am your host, Nestor Rodriguez, a.k.a.
Nestorius.
That's my man, Simon motherfucking Kaufman.
Yes, folks, that's right.
That's right.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Skid Row Studios. That's a .com. That's check, listen live every Thursday, 9 p.m. for me, my man, Nesta Rodriguez, that's and right. Rich Corbin, everybody.
That's right.
Thank you.
That's
thank
right.
You.
Listen live. Listen live. And Rich, what's up, baby?
Hey, man. Hey, what's up, everybody? How you doing out there?
A.K.A. Louis C.K. Motherfucker looks like Louis C.K. Welcome to another episode of Nestorius Public Radio. I believe this is what, episode 10, I believe?
Episode 10. This is like the Ten Commandments, this, you know, the 10 statutes, the episode X.
This is episode 10, the Lord of the Sith.
Let's recap. What do we had up to this point? We've had Dennis Quaid interview. We've had Michael Chiklis. Who else? We had Jack McGee.
Crash, the famed Crash. My good friend of mine, graffiti artist. We're gonna have one of our upcoming shows, Mason Pryor, Richard Pryor's son. That's gonna be dope.
That's right. We got him coming up.
Yep, that's gonna be dope. Shit like that. We're gonna be kicking it. That's right. Tonight we're gonna be talking about breweries. The outrageous amount of breweries in America since the 1800s. Drunk driving. Toronto's mayor on crack. What? And in Detroit, motherfuckers are meeting their payroll with crack. Ah, happy prostitute ads in Brazil. A cure for the wondering eye, for those that can't keep their necks straight from watching jiggling asses as they walk by. We're also going to talk about food issues. Bacteria that's good for you. Taco Bell employees that are licking taco shells. Chinese firms that are going to buy an American pork company. And then we're going to talk about their arrest for dealing in fake meat. And also part two of the crash interview. That's right, baby. America has more breweries than at any time since the 1880s. The number of brewery permits spiked 19% last year to 2,751, with the biggest increases in California and Texas. Great. Two of the states that require people to drive the most. Yeah. Right? But, all but seven states gained breweries, while just four, including New Jersey, lost one or more. That's from Bloomberg.com. Which leads us up to drunk driving, an article that says how much... It's too much. Should it be a crime to have one more for the road? Asked Ashley Halsey III.
Thank you, Ashley, for starting that discussion, by the way.
Yeah,
and we're going to continue it.
Yeah, yeah, in the Washington Post. The National Transportation Safety Board has suggested lowering the legal threshold for drunk driving from its current blood alcohol level of 0.08% to 0.05. And this is what it translates to. A 160-pound man could reach a 0.05 with a single martini or two beers if consumed quickly.
Yes.
While a 120-pound woman could get there with just one beer or a glass of wine. Yes.
A 140-pound man could get to 0.05 by smelling the armpits of a drunk person. This is ridiculous.
Fast, if he does it fast.
Who's the people? What's the name of the organization that said that they should go to 0.05? 0.05. That means that if you had alcohol last 4th of July... And you get in a car.
that means if you blow your boyfriend and there's some alcohol residue on his ball sack, like within minutes, you're going to come out drinking. So after you finish swallowing, you're going to get in your car and you're going to blow a 0.5 and you're going to get arrested.
Yeah. If you sucked off an Irishman or a Puerto Rican during the Puerto Rican Day Parade at the end of it, you could actually be pulled over.
Well, okay. Well, your question. The National Transportation Safety Board. That's who suggested this.
Okay. My suggestion is that the National Transportation Safety Board should blow each one of us.
But check it.
And drive afterwards home.
But check it. These are the numbers. The federal agency says efforts to prevent drunken driving deaths have stalled at about 10,000 a year. And reducing the legal level to 0.05, the limit in most countries, would significantly reduce crashes and deaths.
You might think
you're fine to drive. Let me just finish this one sentence. You might think you're fine to drive after two or three beers, said the New York Daily News. But research shows that even at 0.05, drivers are 38% more likely to get involved in a crash. One study says the lower limit could save more than 500 lives a year.
Who cares? 500. 500. Think about. So you're saying 10,000 people a year die from drunk driving? Is what that said? Or
I believe what it says is that that's what they've gotten it down to. 10,000 a year.
They're doing good. Stop there.
But yeah, they'll save $500 or 500 lives a year, and they'll make $5 million a fucking month in extra because, yeah, you know, that's the deal.
See, my whole thing on that is that we're in a car culture, especially here in California. So in a car culture, I don't think if you are the little bit inebriated, you shouldn't get behind the wheel.
Right.
Okay? Because the slightest amount of intoxication, the slightest amount, right? Drunk is subjective, right? I'm not drunk. I'm okay. You know? Maybe you're not.
Right.
You know what I mean? But your ability to make decisions is impaired.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. It's impaired somewhat, slightly, even if it's a little bit.
Yeah, and well, here's the thing, though. You got these people driving around with their fucking double-tall macchiatos and these big SUVs that they don't even know how to fucking drive. Their ability's already impaired by driving with a cup in their fucking hand. Now, you get a ticket for having a cell phone in your hand, but you won't get a ticket for having a fucking Starbucks in your hand.
Well, we're not talking
about... Or will you? I mean...
No, well, we're not talking about macchiatos.
I know it changes
about
the
drinking.
Subject
no,
on
no,
that,
No, no,
but...
no, no, it doesn't. It doesn't because the argument could be said, how alert are you at 6 o'clock in the morning? You're worse than if you were drunk at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I've
geeked out on a fucking Red Bull, and now you're like hyperactive or hyper aware or whatever. I don't know. You just want to get through that fucking light because you're so amped up, and then you T-bone a fucking car
out. In many states, insurance companies will deem you responsible for an accident if they find a coffee cup or something of that effect in your car.
Which is ridiculous.
No, it's not. I'm gonna tell you. I've been in an accident, okay? And all of it is valid. I'm on the 101 freeway. For a millisecond, I just turn to the left, not wholeheartedly without my eyes on the road, to get my cup of coffee. As I sip it, a car in front of me cold stops. All it takes is a millisecond, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Listen,
so
that could be your radio. Maybe you were driving on 0.5 radio. You know, in your blood or something. You know, I mean, you're changing the channel on something. It could happen to anything. They're just trying to find another way to suck more money out of people.
Yeah.
Do you know why they call them accidents?
Because people are fucking drinking coffee cups and they cut in front of you.
Because they're just accidents.
Yeah,
and
they
here's
act
the thing.
Like that.
Here's
not
the thing.
What the word is.
Here's the thing. You talk about being impaired to drive and make decisions when you're drunk. I've had ex-girlfriends that I've dated, college-educated, fully functioning adults who are incapable of driving just because they're fucking morons, okay? I mean, every day in this country, scores of driver's licenses are handed out to skinny, dumb chicks in suburban areas, okay? Skinny, dumb, white chicks are all over the roads, okay?
I've seen some skinny, dumb, black chicks, too.
Okay.
Oh, my God, I haven't had anything all day. I'm going to get behind a wheel. I think I'll just throw up my lunch.
We're
going to
pick up Chrissy for cheerleading practice.
Hold on.
Fuck you.
They're
fucking faded from not eating all day.
At the end of the day.
I had a Ritz cracker.
At the end of the day, we were talking about this earlier. It always comes down to this, responsibility, okay? Always comes down to responsibility. And at the end of the day, it comes down to this. If you are not responsible, then you can't do it. And let me tell you something. When people drink or when they text or when they're drinking lattes and they get on the road, anything that you do that'll take the focus away from driving, which all of us, All of us are guilty of. All of us. We're in, even if you don't do any of that stuff and you're just driving, all the damn electronic neon signs that are all over the place, there's so many fucking distractions that you, point is, you don't need anything else.
Right. You are supposed to drive your car while drinking coffee, listening to the radio, and talking on the phone. Do you know why? Can I prove it?
Go ahead.
Because the person that made the car put a radio, a phone outlet,
and a coffee cup holder.
Right. Yeah. That fucking says to me, part of my language, that this car is meant to be driven.
Pardon your language?
This car you should be fucking sorry.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Drinking coffee because they put a coffee cup holder there.
This is the Nestorius motherfucking public radio show.
Say it again,
wrong with you?
If they put a blow-up doll...
This is the motherfucking Nestorius public radio show.
Big the fuck up
to all you driving motherfuckers that pay attention to the signs. Big up, you non-drinking Coca-Cola smoking marijuana ingesting motherfuckers. Big up. Big up to all you insurance card carrying non-fucking disappointing drivers on the freeway, man.
Look, I'm not the person to ask about drunk driving because I've been drunk driving since I was 14. Okay.
Here, you know what the solution is?
What?
Oh, bullshit.
Capital punishment.
No. This is my solution. They should have, like, either on and off drunk driving days. So Tuesdays, anyone who wants to get fucked up out of their mind, let them drive. The rest of us, we stay off the freeway.
Public service announcement. If you're on the road today, don't forget.
Either it's
1.0 driving limit.
Right. Either that or have one fucked up drunk driving lane. Just have, you know, like a speed pass lane. Let them drive in one lane. And if you get caught in another lane while you're drunk, not only do you get arrested, but you get beat the fuck up by everybody else who's on the freeway.
Yeah, and put bumper rails on it.
Right. Big up for bumper rails on the freeway for your drunk driving motherfuckers.
No, but check this out, though. You're in Los Angeles. You go out to dinner for the night.
We're in Los Angeles.
Listen. You're in a heavily populated area. You pay for your meter. You go inside or you park it in your lot. You walk in. You have a couple glasses. You walk out. You say goodbye to your friends. And you're like, I think maybe I'm too drunk to drive. What do you do? This is the thing that no one talks about. What are you supposed to do, dude? You can't leave your car there.
Why not?
Because it's going to get towed.
So then you get somebody who can drive who's not drunk, and you have them move it somewhere.
Okay, so you walk up to a random homeless person at the bus stop.
Stop there. Again, you're going to go back to responsibility. Here's the deal. I used to get high. I used to sniff large quantities of cocaine. This is for all you young fucks that want to know how to do it. I used to smoke. I sold crack. I used to smoke crack. I smoked angel dust. I smoked angel dust laced with crack. But check it out. When I did it.
The following public service announcement.
When I did it, I didn't have anywhere to go. It was just like, that was it. I was hanging out in the shack and getting fucked up out of my mind. You understand?
Yeah.
I wasn't going to get behind the wheel. I wasn't going to go in front of any police. I wasn't going to do anything, but I was going to dedicate the rest of the weekend to getting fucked up. You understand? So if you want to do that, right, and you're planning on getting drunk and you're planning on getting blistered out of your mind, there's nothing wrong with it. Just make sure.
You just have to be responsible.
Make sure that you do it in a place where you're not going to involve anybody else. Mm-hmm. That's at the end of the day.
But some would argue there's a difference between alcohol and angel dust.
No, not really.
Some might make that. You're not going to go to a restaurant to smoke angel dust.
No, but if you're going to, put it this way, if you're going to plan on getting blasted out of your mind, which in your example, the person maybe wasn't planning on it, in which case she's probably an alcoholic, because usually alcoholics go out thinking they're just going to have one. Next thing you know, they wake up on a transcontinental flight somewhere else that they weren't planning on going to be on.
Yeah.
All right. Real quick, how about a solution like this? And this isn't funny or anything. It's a little too practical for NPR.
Hey, but listen, Nick, funny. Turn off his mic.
Well, I'll do it myself. Yeah. No, listen. What's the big deal? Like you can't leave your car anywhere, right? So where's your car parked? On the street, at the valet or something? So maybe the restaurant that served you too much or that you drank too much at the restaurant gives you a little voucher and they they blow, you know, make you blow in their little machine that they have there, and then they give you a little ticket, and you put that in your dashboard, and then you get a pass to park your car until the next day.
This is Los Angeles. They want your money. They're coming for your soul.
If they really want it, there are ways to really solve the problem, but they don't want to because it's a lot. There's more money coming in by giving you tickets and getting DUIs than by actually solving the problem.
If somebody gets arrested for DWI, hurt somebody or kill somebody, and they left your establishment, okay, guess who's going to get in trouble?
Oh, the establishment.
There you go.
The bartender or the waiter who sold them.
Responsibility to the establishment.
500 lives might be lost.
Because it's never the responsibility of the person who's drinking anymore.
Right,
because we have no individual rights anymore because we have no individual responsibilities anymore.
Well,
everybody expects these things.
Tipping
It always comes back. Always comes back to how when you lose one thing, you know, you lose everything.
Right.
Which makes no sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
You kick some of your old school knowledge on what to do if you're getting blasted on a weekend. I'm going to kick you some of my old school knowledge about how to drive drunk. It was like the ninth or 10th grade, and we had for our health class to go down to an AA meeting.
Right.
As part of our health class.
I could have taken you to one.
I think you were actually sponsoring that meeting. Esther sent as the guest speaker.
I could have taken you to one. Yeah. I mean, you didn't have to go to class that day.
Yeah, and Esther was very kind. He set out the pamphlets and cookies for us in the back.
I made the coffee that day.
And so we're sitting there, and this one guy, they're all sharing their stories. And this one guy said, he's like, man, I drove drunk for years, and I never got caught because I just drove the speed limit.
Right.
And we turned and we looked at each other and we're like, that's genius. If you're going to drive drunk, drive the speed limit.
Right.
Don't talk on your cell phone. Use your turn signals.
Right.
Be alert.
Right.
Use your mirrors. And you can drive drunk.
Right.
I've been doing this since I was 14 years old.
Yeah. And then you'll be mistaken for an illegal Mexican because that's how they drive. Because they're driving with both hands on the steering wheel, speed limit, no cell phone, no fucking coffee.
Yeah.
So like doing like one mile below the speed limit so as to not stand out.
That's how you have to drive.
Guess what? If you're in Southern California, what's the speed limit in Southern California, Rich?
65. 55 if you're on the fucking 101.
65.
65 generally,
for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
What is the average speed that people do in California and Southern California?
80.
85.
At least.
80 is the minimum average.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be doing 65 or 60 on the freeway like some fucking retards out there, you're either drunk, you're either fucking trying to evade the INS, or you fucking got your head up your ass, okay? Because no one drives the speed limit.
Right. You're going to stick out.
You're going to stick out like a sore thumb, trust me. And when you have cars passing you on your right or like moving around you to get, which happens a lot, you know what I mean? Anyway, listen. This is going to be it with this. If you're drinking and driving, be responsible, okay? At the end of the day, be responsible. Take responsibility for your action. Again, if you are planning on getting wasted, right? Usually you plan, right? You plan for a vacation, right?
Yeah, plan for the night.
If you're going to plan to get wasted, plan who's going to take you home, where you're going to go, where you're going to park your car, are you going to drive there? Plan it. Don't fucking wake up with 8 cocks in your mouth in a blackout, not knowing where you're going, what's going on, and find out you killed somebody.
Such a weight lifted when you know you're going out and you have a ride home or you just don't have your car, and you'll get home somehow, trust me.
Right.
L.A. is spread out, but it's just you could get as shitty as possible if you, you know, and then there's no guilt. It's guilt-free drinking.
Yeah, and
enhance your stupidity.
Yeah,
and you know, if any of our listeners out there are ever like feeling like they're in a predicament where, you know, they don't want to drive, but they're thinking about driving drunk, you know, just man the fuck up, take some breath mints and do it.
Call me. Call me. What you do is a week before you're going to do it, call 1-800-893-9562 on a Thursday night. Call me. I'll come pick you up.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be great. Nestor pulling up to like, where'd she say this was? Pulls up some like some prostitute missing a leg.
I'll come pick you up.
Nestor will come pick you up. That's what you want. That'll be great.
Yeah.
You get in the car. So, how'd you lose your eye? That's great.
Anyway, we're going to move on really, really quick. Crack. Crack smoke is back. Just want to let y'all know, crack ain't whack. crack is back. Toronto's mayor has been accused of smoking crack. Anybody up on this? Have you seen his picture? Look at him. He's scratching his neck as if he has fleas.
He's like, I didn't know this was bed bugs.
He was actually taking it because he had bed bugs. Yeah. And
we have seen a cell phone video of what looks very much like Toronto Mayor Rob Ford smoking crack, said Robin Doolittle and Kevin Donovan in the Toronto Star. After a source tipped us off last month, we met a Somali drug dealer who played us the video three times. While we have no way to authenticate the video, what do you got authenticated? The guy's smoking crack in the video. He's smoking crack.
I don't know. I bought some real unauthentic videos from Somali drug dealers on subways in New York City.
It's unbelievable. And then in Detroit, we're going to keep going back to Detroit. Detroit has a lot of stuff going on, which is crazy. But in Detroit, the owner of Big C's Tire Shop in Detroit, right? Kevin Dietz.
Detroit.
Right.
Kevin Dietz from Big C's.
Yeah. Federal prosecutors have shut down Big C's Tire Shop, a tire store on Detroit's east side, after discovering that its owner was allegedly paying his employees with crack rocks instead of paychecks.
Free enterprise. It's a free enterprise system, and Big C's Tire Shop is merely taking advantage of what our forefathers created.
I personally don't see anything wrong with that.
I don't see anything wrong with
that. That's his business.
It's Big C.
You know, if I'm an employee and my boss says, look, I can give you cash, and out of that cash in a check, you're going to have to pay 33% of that to the government. Or if you want, I can get you, you know, all the rice and milk and anything you want for your family that's worth up to that, you know, paycheck.
Or instead of rice and milk, just crack.
Whatever. Yeah. Whatever it is that you need, right?
Sure.
That should be up to you.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a barter system.
Right.
Yeah.
They're going to buy it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're going to spend their paycheck on that, so you might as well cut the middleman.
Let me tell you something.
And they work so good.
They don't have to go out, be in danger of dealing with the dealer and all that stuff. You're just helping them out.
Let me tell you something. The real issue is cutting down on danger.
Yeah.
The real issue is that tax money. Because in addition to that, officials caught onto the crack payment plan after tracking $140,000 in bogus paychecks to the tire shop, where they also found laser printers, blank IDs, and stock paper for checks. Neighbors, including a senior living center across the street that houses more than 100 retirees, are hoping the drug bust will make the neighborhood safer.
Yeah.
Investigators, meanwhile, said they wouldn't charge Big C's owner with drug charges because the evidence is stronger for the counterfeit check case, which carries a harsher penalty. Could you imagine this shit?
And they work so good when they want crack. You know, they really do the tires really well the way they, you know.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? In Brazil. This is, I just went
in. Brazil.
In Brazil. Brasileiro. Brazil. Brazil.
The caring country.
I'm on a website looking at some photos of some fucking shriveled up, hacked up Brazilian hookers.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And, no, basically.
That never downloads viruses.
No, basically, the Brazil took down, they pulled down these prostitute ads, right? And they got huge backlash for promoting prostitution. But did you see the photos?
Well, prostitution is legal. That's one thing we got to let the listeners
prostitution
know.
Prostitution is legal in Brazil.
Yeah.
And for the most part, these posters were about promoting safety, for instance. One of the campaigns says, Eu sou feliz sendo prostituta, which means I am very happy being a prostitute in Brasileiro.
Yeah, so right? They put some prostitute side. I mean, I don't understand what the point of that was. What do you think they were trying to do?
Well, June 2nd is International Day of Prostitutes. So they have these.
that beats the shit out of Secretary Day.
No, I'm just saying.
I can't believe I missed it. That was 2 days ago?
No, what I'm saying.
Man, I miss all the fun holidays.
What I'm saying is, big up to the fucking June 2nd Prostituta Day!
Save your income and go out and get yourself a prostitute to support the cause!
Yeah. So anyway, the second poster says, I cannot be seen without a condom, my love. But here's the thing. Both of these prostitutes, I swear to God, I'd fuck a homeless guy before I'd have sex with either of these two women.
The campaign with the prostitutes, they were trying to go ahead and promote safety, condom safety, all that sorts of stuff. But people got out mad. It was kind of a little bit of a backlash. I believe some of it was from some religious groups that were upset. What kind of people are not using condoms with prostitutes? Like, well, what kind of people are that? I mean, is this that people don't know about it?
The people who already have diseases. And they don't give a fuck anymore.
That's brutal, though.
Anyway, the other thing in the news that came up this week, which is a little disgusting, is the Taco Bell employee licking the tacos.
I love how we go from Brazilian prostitute to more disgusting.
Well, that's it's just licking really... tacos and licking tacos. It's yeah. pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, I guess you got a point.
How'd you get herpes, my taco?
Yeah. Well, basically, a Taco Bell employee's social media post of a photo of him licking a stack of empty taco shells has set off a PR mess. Here's a Taco Bell employee who was thinking a bit outside the bun. On Monday, the consumerist, a blog that's a subsidiary of Consumer Reports, posted a hard-to-swallow photo of a Taco Bell employee holding a long stack of about 25 empty taco shells while licking them with his long tongue fully exposed.
Where did this take place, do we know?
They won't say.
I think this was in Texas, no?
Of course it was, because I tell you why. This is what happens when you don't have healthy outlets for children to engage and explore, you know, in sexual manners. This is when they can't go out and have dances. And, you know, the kid's like 15, 16. He's never had a chance to be with a woman. Next thing you know, he's licking tacos.
It's crazy.
And then they post it to their Facebook. That's the ridiculous thing. You know, I mean,
you know what? Anybody who does anything like that and posts their shit to Facebook deserves everything.
Yeah.
Like twice. The fine or whatever, the punishment should be just doubled out of plain stupidity. Yeah. I drove drunk tonight and run over a bicyclist. Then you should just get the death penalty because you're obviously not smart enough to make it in this society. Yeah, I mean, come on. When you're doing shit like that, you're going to kill somebody out of your own stupidity.
Yeah, for all you children out there that were born in the political correct world that never had a chance to learn anything about the real world, you don't put crime online. Okay. Next thing
that's
I want to mention.
That's a good slogan.
Yeah, you don't put your crime online. Fuckface. And the other thing is, they're like, oh my God, I can't believe my employee Taco Bell worker would act in such a manner. Why not? Where do you think they're hiring these people? Like, what do you think they're doing? Lining outside the halls of Cornell to grab these kids to come out?
They're not coming out of church.
Are they coming out of MIT, campus booths? No. These fuckface, you're hiring...
It's 90% people with no conscience.
You're hiring stupid people. You're hiring the... not only are they stupid people, they are the descendants of stupid people.
But don't
you
piss them off, too.
You can trace stupidity back in their family for generations. Like, these are the people you're dealing with. They're young kids. Like, let the kid lick a taco. Like, no harm, no foul. I mean, come on.
Lick a taco.
He doesn't get out much. He has the genetic makeup of, like, tapioca pudding. Like, what's he going to do with his life?
Actually, the guy's from Irvine, California.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, his family was really excited when he got the job. They had a picnic. I mean, fuck it. Lick a taco.
Look, if you ask around, you're at a party or you're sitting around, you ask around anybody who's worked fast food when they were younger, they'll tell you stories of what they did or somebody else that they witnessed.
You have to just
completely ask around and you'll never fucking eat out again because it's just gotten worse because the bar keeps getting raised. You know, you see somebody peeing in the ice machine or fucking doing something like that. There's somebody that's going to try and outdo him.
Yeah, dude.
You're going to get your fucking burger like slathered all over, you know, their nuts. And they, you know, but the best thing you can do if you're going to do that is just be fucking nice and cool at the drive-thru because they are just looking for any reason to adulterate your food. You're going to get some ass hairs in your shit if you're a dick.
Yeah, I used to work at this restaurant in downtown Seattle, and I was like bartending, and I used, after work, when we shut down the place, I used to bed one of the cocktail waitresses over table 11.
Oh, yeah.
And that was like always the joke, like, you want to meet me at table 11 tonight because the cameras couldn't catch it. And so, yeah.
That was a clean table.
If you ate at table 11, I'm not going to mention the place, but there's a good chance. You know,
there's a lot of ass sweat on that table.
Yeah, a lot of good.
And you're going to get a good amount of flora fauna in your meal that way.
That is hilarious.
You know.
So moving on with the disgusting food stuff. Taco Bell isn't the only fast food establishment that these kids were doing. There's photos of this one kid.
There was someone peeing in a bowl.
Taking a bath. In the dishwashing you know, taking a bath in the fucking dishwashing thing of the Burger King. And
well, there was another one where somebody was standing in the big plastic bin of shredded lettuce for your burgers. Where was that? That was about a year ago. They were standing there. They took pictures of that. That was one of the first ones that came out.
I've worked so many shit jobs that I have so many fun stories from them. I remember. I was working in Miami at Starbucks when I was living in Miami. And it was this place. It was just packed out. Like, I want to say it was the Grove area in Miami, and like on a Friday night, it was just the line out the door, crazy. So you're so stressed. There's everything going on at once. The garbage cans would overflow onto the floor because we did not have time to go change the garbage cans. It's just more kids coming, and more people coming, and more moms. And in Miami, they don't know how to order Starbucks. You know, they come up and they order like one espresso. Well, okay, well, we changed the whole way coffee was done, so. And they don't get it. You know, they think they're ordering like Cuban coffee and shit
Right.
Yeah. So the only thing we do to pass the time was we would just get liquor, rum, and like pour it in the drink. So we just get plastered, you know, fun times like that. We were just drunk as shit, serving up your Starbucks coffee, hanging out.
Well, the other thing that's that was going on is there is a Chinese firm to buy what's the name of the company?
Smithfield
Foods. Foods. Thank you.
Yeah.
China's Shuanghui International will pay $4.7 billion to acquire American meat processor Smithfield Foods, said Michael J. De La Merced and Mark Scott in NewYorkTimes.com. Shuanghui, China's largest pork processor, will pay $34 a share for the Virginia-based ham producer. The merger is expected to help Smithfield establish a foothold in China as growth in other markets slows, but the sale will likely draw close government scrutiny over Chinese food standards, even though the deal is aimed at exporting American pork to China rather than importing Chinese products. Well, here's the thing that I have. I'm going to tell you what Smithfield, they own Armour, Curly's, Corando, Margarita, Cook's, Healthy Ones, Kretschmar, John Morrill, Eckrich, and Farmland. These are all name brands under the Smithfield company, and it's mostly pork products, salami, ham, and all this other crap. And the reason I'm saying this is because about a month ago, or a little bit more than a month ago, China had arrested 900 meat companies, or 900 people, I think. No, 904 people for fake meat scandal, right? So they arrested 904 people for meat-related offenses over the past 3 months, including a gang that made more than 1 million euro by passing off fox, mink, and rat meat as mutton, the country's public security ministry has announced. So, since January's, authorities have seized 20,000 tons of illegal products and solved 382 cases of meat-related crime, primarily the sale of toxic, diseased, and counterfeit meat. I just want
to... Let me add on to this.
Please.
Just don't buy anything that you have to eat from China. You just shouldn't.
Yeah, but this is the thing. You're not going to know because now you have an American corporation.
There's got to be some policies put into place where the origin of the food has to be
emerging.
Put.
No. But here's the deal. Last week, we got into a big old debate about tipping. And we got into a big debate about how California passed a law that allows establishments to tax gratuities if they're put in as a service charge, mm-hmm. right? In other words, before you actually put a tip, if they actually include it in the bill. So California passed this law.
They right? somehow finagled it
they
in
there. They finagled it. No, they didn't finagle it. People are smoking too much fucking weed out there, I'm telling you. Because here's the deal. Last November, they tried to pass, there was a bill to pass labeling, proper labeling in foods.
So that
you would know exactly the origin of your food mm-hmm. or what's in your food, right? And that did not pass.
No.
Right?
Which is
5,000 marijuana spots opened up and that passed, right?
Right.
The tax on gratuities hidden as a service charge passed, right? But shit that's pertinent to your fucking health, that's the type of stuff that doesn't pass.
Nobody's paying attention.
Yeah.
Well, the food lobby is so powerful in this country, and they're so in bed with the government and the medical industry. It's like a three-headed monster. There's been a lot of stuff written about it. I mean, the amount of corn in all of our products is astronomical.
The amount of corn is.
They'll put two fucking things. No, they'll put two things on the same bill, and they'll say, okay, if maybe this wasn't how it was, but as an example, they say, okay, we're gonna, let's say yes if you want to put the labeling for the, for what is in the actual food, if it's, where it comes from and all that, right? The growers have to do that, but if you vote no, then we have to chop your arm off, everybody's arm off, like something ridiculous. They'll take something away to kind of even it out. They always do that. They did it with the, they did it all the time. I can't even fucking think. There's too many things going on.
Yeah, it's
about look that. At all this listen, thing that's going but, on with this Monsanto or whatever that they're putting out. They're genetically modifying foods.
A thing just came out today. Sorry to cut you off, a couple days ago, that Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, 99 Ranch, all these markets are getting sued because they were selling ginseng and plum flavored candies tainted with lead coming from China, and they knew about it.
Well, what's happening right now?
They knew about it. Saying they don't know about Whole Foods.
Wow.
But
you know why? Because you know what's happening too, which is a little fucked up. Lawyers.
Excuse your language.
There's a meter. It's the new lawsuit. There are like lawyers going around now that California.
It's the new style.
Now that California has passed certain like lead laws about traceable amounts of lead. Listen. There are lawyers with little meters that are walking around. That's all they do is they go to these stores and they go up and down trying to find the lead and then bring lawsuits against you. I know this because I used to date a girl that was in the clothing business, and she would go to like a lot of conventions. And one of the things that they were talking about is with manufacturing of goods, because it's all coming from China, India, Bangladesh, all that stuff, and coming over here. And there's really kind of, in a lot of ways, no way for a place like Macy's or, some Nordstrom's or, to detect how much lead is in there. And they're getting wrecked.
There's a problem. Our country has become a nation of pussies, okay? There's nothing wrong with eating a little lead, okay?
Yeah, we should put a lead in your brain.
I'm just telling you. I grew up in the projects. There were 30 years worth of lead paint on the walls. We all fucking snacked
a couple of lead chips. I think that says a lot, though.
No, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, there was nothing wrong with fucking eating a couple of lead chips, okay? Back then, we had no Pringles. You know what I'm saying? We had no sea salt dusted fucking deep fried potato chips, no crinkle cut potato chips. We had lead. Get the fuck with it. A little bit of lead, especially in a candy, there's nothing wrong with
it. Yeah, man the fuck up. I mean, think about this for a second. All these little pussified little parents with their pussified little kids like, oh, get them away from almonds. Like, none of that stuff happened when we were kids. We all turned out fine.
Get them away from almonds.
Everyone's okay. Our generation is way more functional than all these little nitwits.
Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to move on to part two of John Crash Matto's interview. And basically, where we left off on part one, I was asking Crash if he had ever, as a kid, if he had received encouragement from his parents. And this is the continuation. If you need to listen to the beginning, please go to episode 9 and tune into part 1 of Crash.
Well, that's one of the differences in what I know about success and early success is encouragement and somebody validating what you do.
Right, yeah.
And validating that, wow, that you have potential.
Validating is a really good word. especially with Graf, you know, there are only a few in the very beginning, someone like Charlie Ahern
right.
and Jane Dixon,
right.
who absolutely considered us peers, which was like, you know, like, wow. I mean, to this day, I say it openly that if it wasn't for Jane Dixon, we wouldn't be around.
Really? How's that?
Well, Jane Dixon approached me. Well, I met Charlie when he was scouting locations for Wild Style.
Right.
I met him with Fat Five Freddy.
Right.
And we met at a place called Fashion Motor.
Right.
Never knew what the place was, and I lived in the neighborhood. So I went to the place. I met him there.
What is Fashion Motor?
Fashion Motor was a nonprofit gallery in the South Bronx that specialized in all types of art. Their whole theory was anything goes. You know, it's very interesting.
Very radical. Very radical because you're talking about the South Bronx.
Yes.
Most people don't know about the South Bronx. This is the early 80s, right? Like 82?
No, we're talking about... They opened in 79.
Fashion Motor opened in 79?
Yes.
And when did you become hip to Fashion Motor? When was this
1980 to 81. Well, 1980 because in 81 was when I did the big graffiti show.
At Fashion Motor?
Yes.
Well, it's radical. That's a radical thing. So go continue with Jane Dixon and Charlie and all
so,
that.
So you know, Jane was married to Charlie, and we met anyway. So she asked me if I would be interested in painting an installation she's doing. She was doing a human maze, where she took cardboard and created a maze, and you had to walk through it to get to the middle. And the middle, she had like a table with cookies and stuff, and you had to try and get yourself out. So it was a big maze. So I painted all the walls and all the cardboard.
Oh, wow.
And that was like my first
exposure
to doing something within a space. And when they did the invite, you know, she had me in the invite with my name. I'm like, wow, check this out. Mm-hmm. So then from there, Stefan Ines, who ran Fashion Motor, approached me about doing a show. I said, sure. But then I didn't want to do a show on me. I just had to do a group show.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, so if it wasn't for Jane, and then, you know, the whole thing I did, and then the thing with Stefan Ines, we wouldn't be talking today.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that's very radical because no one wanted anything to do with the South Bronx and, you know, at that time.
Yeah, especially and right about that time, Carter was leaving office and Reaganomics was making its thing. So it was a huge thing. It was a huge, huge moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Google Fashion Moda, and that's MODA, and Google Stefan Ines. Very important in the in the historical content of street art because it wasn't just you; it was a lot of guys like Lee,
Keith Haring, John Fechner. Barbara Kruger, Jenny Holzer.
Wow.
John Ahern.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom Adonis.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about, you know, a who's who.
A lot of people don't really know a lot about these guys. John Ahern has been my neighbor for God knows almost 20 years or some shit here in New York City. John Ahern happens to be the twin brother of Charlie Ahern, who happens to be the director of probably the quintessential hip-hop movie encompassing graffiti, breakdancing, and rap music, Wild Style.
Wild Style.
And how did you get involved in Wild Style? Through Jane, obviously?
I was with Charlie, and we were scouting locations. And there's a true story. When Charlie started writing the script, he had told me that the script was originally written about me. It took place in South Bronx. I had an older brother who was in a Vietnam vet and Hanoi, so the movie's the same type of thing. Eventually, I was supposed to do the part that Lee did, but I didn't want to do it because I wanted to be involved on Broadway on the Twilight Thought play, which was at the same time.
Oh, right. Where you guys actually painted.
Yeah, live on Broadway.
Live on. You guys painted canvases, the backdrop
right,
for Twilight Thought.
Rise up as we painted the canvas, unwind, and go all the way to the top. So at the end of the performance, you'll see our names really large.
Dope.
Yeah, it was very cool. So that was happening at the same time as the movie, and I felt the Broadway play was more important for me.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I did that. And they talked me into doing it, so they changed it up a little bit. But the actual storyline is based on me.
Nice. That's very interesting because you could have been indoctrinated or, you know, etched as the main character of the quintessential hip-hop movie of our generation. Yeah. Instead, you chose to do something a little bit more sophisticated. Well, I mean,
I guess you could say that, but that wasn't. It was just, I just felt to me the Broadway thing was a little more thought-provoking. You know, it was a little more interesting. Right. I mean, to do a movie, you know, thinking is you could do, you know,
anybody could do a movie.
Correct.
I mean, meaning you can do a movie anytime.
Correct.
And you were in our movie, Acts of Worship.
Yes.
Which is awesome. My wife got you. She wanted to get everybody she could to do a part in the movie. And you're a guy on the payphone. And you wind up. I mean, you have a distinguished voice like myself.
Yeah.
So you hear your voice right away.
Trust me.
So I want to go back and not to dwell on it, but just curious as to the ramification, not the ramifications per se, but like the consequences of having to, how you got your materials to do your murals on the subway so that people can know who you are.
You stole everything. The ramifications of that, well, there's two ways you can look at it. One, you can see how easy it is to steal stuff and you become a klepto, you know, and start stealing stuff left and right, which a lot of guys did.
And forget about painting and just say, painting. Fuck it, the stealing shit is better.
Yeah, because you can turn around and I could steal a sheepskin coat from like Herman's Sporting Goods store, go down the block and sell for $50. I'm like, yo, $50 in 1978.
A lot of money.
Yeah. So like, all right, so I could turn around, you know, buy me a couple of Adidas, I'm good. Next week, go out and buy, or go steal a down coat, sell it, get me a leather jacket, you know, and on and on and on. I mean, we used to, from Steve's Baby, we used to steal steaks.
In the mid-70s. You used to steal steaks from where?
In the mid-70s, steak and coffee became very expensive. Almost prohibitive in South Bronx.
Because no one could afford it.
Yeah, it was crazy expensive. So we used to steal steaks and coffee.
And sell them to get money to buy paint.
And go down the block like, yo, coffee for like a dollar.
That's funny because one of my episodes, I think it's episode 2 or 3, was about Tide. How people are stealing Tide to sell. Yeah. Because Tide costs about $20-something for a 150-ounce container. Yeah. And it costs about $20-something. And the profit margin for the stores is only like a dollar or two, believe it or not. Yeah. But it's so sought after and not affordable that, you know.
It's not. It doesn't make sense.
Well, it does make sense. Yeah. It does make sense.
Well, it makes sense in terms of making the money. But does it make sense that you're going to put something so, you know, and then try and sell it on 138th Street?
You mean like steaks and coffee?
Yeah, just like steaks and coffee.
But for instance, you go to Puerto Rico. Right. I don't know when's the last time you went there. Coffee is behind fucking locked cages.
And steak is very expensive because, I mean, a lot of our family aren't, you know, made of money. So when you know, you go to visit your brother, and they pull out steak with rice. You're like, that's like a huge honor because it's so expensive.
Right, right. That's a Puerto Rican term, by the way, a Latino term. You're not made of money. My grandmother used to be like, turn that light off. You're not made of money. That shit is hilarious. I don't know anybody who's made of money, Ma.
Yeah, no one is.
That's funny. Yeah. That's funny. But that's a very interesting socioeconomic thing. Whereas, you know, things have to be locked up because as currency, you know, currency isn't just money. Currency is what you can sell.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like
it's a bargaining chip.
Exactly.
That's what currency is, a bargaining chip.
Correct. So, like, if a pound of Bustelo coffee can yield me $2, right?
Correct.
I'll steal a pound of Bustelo coffee because that shit is easy to sell.
Yeah. It's like our big thing was also stealing cheese. The government cheese. Check it out. They used to give out these blocks of cheese that were maybe 18 to 2 feet, 18 inches or 2 feet wide.
Right.
And what we used to do, we used to steal it. And go
steal it from the truck, or
steal it from where they stored them.
Oh wow!
And then we used to go to the grocery stores, and they would give us $15, $20.
Because they sold, they made the sandwiches.
By the time they slice all that cheese, they'll make $200-$300 in a day.
Yo, that's hilarious. Let's get that again. By the time you slice that block of cheese, you'll make $200 or $300. That's a fucking huge piece of cheese.
Well, think about it. What was a quarter pound cheese? Was what, like $1.50?
I have no idea.
You're talking about 2 foot cheese. Because nobody bought a pound of cheese. Everybody, you know, no one's made the money.
Right.
So right. You know, everything was like a quarter pound salami, quarter pound ham, quarter right. pound cheese.
Also, back then,
there was no Swiss. There was white Americans or yellow American cheese.
Right, right, right. And back then, you pretty much bought what you were going to use.
Correct. There were no leftovers.
Right. You're not going to buy 50 pounds of fucking this, 50 pounds of that, and then, you know, 2 months later, you got to throw it out. Our families were very...
Yeah, I mean, I'm like that to this day. I don't buy a lot of groceries. My wife does because we got kids, but I buy what I'm going to use for the next 2 or 3 days. That's it. And then when it runs out, boom, we got more.
Me too. And I'm a big fan of not throwing away food. I mean, my wife and I go out to eat a lot. And just, you know, the new thing is we've been splitting stuff. Because you can't eat a whole fucking steak. You know what I mean?
Well, I could.
No, but I'm saying it comes down to she can't eat a whole steak. Yeah. And then I'm going to have to eat her half and mine.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So, you know, and being a little bit more conservative. Because, I mean.
That's being green.
It is being green, and it's being mindful and thoughtful of, you know, resources.
Well, you know, remember they tell us that, you know, this little kid in China starving.
That's what we used to be told. You're not made of money, eat all that because there's somebody who's starving in China.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? We didn't realize it, but kids are very conscious of that today.
Well, they should be.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big fan of just doing my part. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid in Puerto Rico, I was washing my hands, and I had the water running.
Don't do that. And wet your hands, take the soap, turn it off, and then turn it back on when you're ready to rinse.
Thank you. And my uncle said, turn that off. You're wasting water.
Yeah, and plus, in Puerto Rico, we didn't pay water in New York until recently. So in Puerto Rico, you have to pay for everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So since that time, exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. I wet my hands, lather up, you know, turn the water off, lather up. Same thing with a shower. Mm-hmm. I wet myself, lather up, and then rinse myself off. I know it sounds crazy because some people love to stay in the shower for like hours.
5 minute showers. I'm in. I do what I got to do. As I'm out, and you know, my kids are like, I'm like 5 minute showers, man. Military.
That's hilarious. So now here's the thing. You know, I went back to college. I started college in like 1983, and then I left college in 85. Anyway, I got a Bachelor of Arts in Visual Arts.
Nice.
And I got that over a course of, I don't know, maybe 8-9 years. Absolutely, I got it. But I mean, the reason being was I started college. I didn't know what I wanted to do. It was a community college. Then I got into an electrician's apprenticeship program. I became an electrician. Then I went back to school. I thought I wanted to do labor law. And then that was not what I wanted to do. I wound up taking all of my life experiences within painting and photography and put it into a degree. But what I'm going to get at is there was a big emphasis on art history, you know, to get a degree like that and to be an artist. And I was always of the school of thought that if you want to be an artist, just be an artist. Mm-hmm. But how do you feel about the relationship between an artist and art history?
Well, I think it goes hand in hand. I mean, you know, I don't think you have to be stooped into it, you know, stooped so into it.
Steeped.
Thank you. Because the stoop is where you sit at when you play baseball.
But the stoop is when you could be stooped into, too.
Right. when you're steeped into it. I think it's important that you know some of it, because some of it is incredibly important. But I don't think you should be motivated to take so much of it to get a degree.
Mm-hmm.
What's the point?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah, no, I mean, sorry.
Keith Haring.
He had no historical, other than hieroglyphics.
The only thing you can think of is Dubuffet, maybe, you know, someone like that, you know, and it's like, and that's like, well, you know, but, I mean, because it's, you know, sort of like that linear type of thing. So he's a good example of that, you know, and the pop artists, you know.
Like James Rosenquist, Andy Warhol.
Yeah, what do they lean on? A lot of them were like failed abstract expressionists, you know, because that came in. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they clicked, you know, something clicked in them independently and it just took off.
So, I mean, now looking back, not when you first started painting,
right.
and taking art as a serious thing, which I want to get to that in a second, because I believe you've always taken art as a serious thing, and I want to know at what point. But you have a decent amount of knowledge on art history. I mean, you mentioned James Rosenquist, Rauschenberg. Mm-hmm. I know you implement some of Lichtenstein's techniques mm-hmm. in your work. And when I mentioned that you were an inspiration to me as an artist, I mean, I remember seeing your work, and I'm like, wow, that's exactly what I want to be doing. I love that. I love the way your letters pop, your colors pop, your images pop. I love the way you can't really see that image 100%, but that it's part of the whole picture. And, you know, again, it provokes art. Like, what is that? Is that an R? Right. Is that an I? Is that I supposed to mean this or whatever? Right. And I love that. And yeah. And that's what I love about art in general.
Right.
You know, when I first started going to museums and looking at even, let's say, Rauschenberg, when he first started doing sculptures, mm-hmm. I used to say, what the fuck is that? A paper bag with a rope on the floor? How's that art?
Right.
But it's art because it provoked the question of what is that?
Right. I mean, the thing with me, you know, just I self-taught myself all the stuff about art history. I mean, when I saw something like, wow, this is really cool. I mean, we didn't have Google, so I went out and, you know, went to the library and, like, tried to figure out who this person is and learn about it because there's a cemetery. Mm-hmm. Then, like, the pop artists, you know, we're 60s kids, so that was part of our walk, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I wasn't into the minimalist stuff in the 70s because I was just interested mm-hmm. in that. So, you learn all this as you're going through life. You know, it's like, you know, you probably have a favorite writer or favorite poet. I love Robert Frost. I learned that about that because I saw something somewhere like, wow, this is really interesting. Mm-hmm. Look it up. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's... If you don't do that, there's an old saying, was it? If you stop learning, you start dying. So it, you know, it's. I think it's a point that you need to broaden yourself mm-hmm. because if you stay in one spot, then you can't teach the world what you want to do.
Right. In other words, you can't be stagnant. The way to not be stagnant is to constantly evolve. And the only way you can evolve is by learning and opening yourself up to ingesting different things and ideas.
You have to because. That's what humanity is, you know. It's an everything, you know. And I can't sit and just like watch TV, you know. There has to be a point to it.
You don't watch like the world's retarded housewives of Mumbai?
I couldn't even tell you who they are.
Come on, man.
I don't watch American Idol.
I've never seen one episode.
The only reason I saw The Voice. This season, because we had a friend from our church, this 18-year-old girl that was like, she made the top 16. Mm-hmm. So now we're texting her, yo, you did good, you know. So,
right.
And she's out, so that's it. I don't even care what's on anymore.
Right. No, I'm with you on that.
So, and I don't even watch sports because it's, you know, so much of it's corrupted and, you know, you don't know what's going on. So I'm an old movies buff and, you know, and if something's interesting, I watch it.
Yeah. I'm also an old movies buff.
Yeah.
You turned me on to, was it Burt Lancaster?
Oh.
The movie about him being a priest?
Yeah. Elmer Gantry.
Amazing. That's a good movie. You want to remake that movie.
I want to remake that movie. I spoke to your wife about it.
Why do you want to remake that movie? I love the movie, by the way.
I think it's still...
relative?
A very relative and very important subject matter because it's putting your trust in something. Putting your faith in something, and
he's an alcoholic. He's a boozer and a user.
Right. And he was a
womanizer.
Yeah, he's a hustler.
He's a hustler.
And that's everybody we know right now. So you know, I was thinking, man, we could do that movie. And I spoke to John, and he said, "Yo, if you can make this happen, I'm in it. I'm with it."
John who?
Leguizamo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, man, we got to that point. I spoke to some people with Smith Barney, and they're ready to back it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but we just couldn't get the right writer.
Actually, that movie can be done for a fairly decent budget. So John Leguizamo, he said he'll do it for $1.5 million. That would be his pay.
I back then.
Doesn't he owe you money for a painting?
Yes, he said. Yes, he does. Yes.
I mean, he owes you money for a painting. You gave him a painting. He never paid you for the painting. That the value of that painting has, you know,
quadrupled.
It's gone up about tenfold.
Yeah.
You know.
That's him.
So you went to school with John Leguizamo in Queens?
No, we went to a school downtown, Murray Bertram High School.
Murray Bertram. That high school is no longer in existence, is it?
Or yeah, still, it's still there. Still there.
Awesome. So from the South Bronx or from the Bronx, you went to high school in Lower Manhattan.
Which a person from the South Bronx never does.
Correct.
A kid from the Bronx goes to school in the Bronx, marries a girl from the Bronx, lives in the Bronx, never goes to Brooklyn, rarely travels.
Keep that shit local.
Yeah, that's a fact.
You married a girl from the Bronx?
Yes, from the projects.
From the projects. And you've been married a long time, huh?
We're going to be 25 years, yeah.
Wow, 25 years.
Yeah, well, anyway, that was part two of John Crash Matos' interview. Tune in next week and episode 11, I believe, for part three of the one-hour-long John Crash Matos interview. That pretty much, concludes the Nestorius Public Radio show for today. You can check us out on our website, Nestorius Public Radio. So that's it, man. Thanks for tuning in to Nestorius Public Radio. Kick it live. Do your thing. Go to iTunes. Download us. Subscribe. Go to Nestorius Public Radio. Subscribe. Tell your friends. And, I might flip you up with some stickers. You know what I'm saying?
Yo, peace. You want stickers? We got stickers.
Yo, peace.
I ain't doing nothing but talking shit, so y'all gotta, encourage me the whole way long. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit, so y'all...